Well, South Africa stands on a knife edge as riots and looting have continued for a fourth day as the South African government struggles to regain control of a situation that was sparked by the jailing of former President Zuma, but seems to have since taken a more broad-based social and civil unrest tone, riddled with opportunism. Sad to say that the situation looks likely to get worse before it gets better, with food and fuel shortages predicted now as a result of the riots and the looting, according to reports from Bloomberg. Banks and retailers tumbled on the local stock exchange yesterday, and the rand has extended losses and is hurtling towards 15 rand as the riots have hurt sentiment, with a number of businesses suffering serious damage and others destroyed. According to the South African Property Owners Association, SAPOA, more than 200 malls have been looted and or destroyed so far, with at least 600 stores burned or damaged. The JSE's banking sector plunged 4.5% yesterday, its worst one-day loss since December of last year, when the country was put into another strict lockdown during the height of the second wave. So what is the end game here? What are the drivers? Has the state lost control? And what does this all portend for the future and for investors? Well, let's welcome our panel to try and pick our way through the detritus of the last few days. Dr. Miriam Altman, Director of Altman Advisory and National Planning Commissioner. William Gumede, Professor at the University of the Wit School of Governance and also Chairperson of Democracy Works, the Foundation. Martin Kingston, Chair of the Steering Committee of Business for South Africa. Franz Cronier, Director at the Center for Risk Analysis, and Yaki Seliers, the founder of the Institute of Security Studies. Dr. Altman, there are a number of worrying developments. There was a very dramatic rise in the use of arson yesterday, and as a general pattern, it seems once a property has been looted, it's then set alight. And so the destruction is deep and damaging, as well as the damage to confidence. But we need to be clear, however, that we understand there are different forces at play. What do you see as the major drivers of the unrest now?
You know, I want to get across one view quite forcefully, which is we have a very deep problem in this country related to poverty, unemployment, and inequality. There's no doubt about that. And there's a lot of anger in relation to service delivery and a lot of service delivery protest, and probably rightly so. But this is just illegal behavior. And I think at the get-go, I'm hearing a lot of people conflating being poor with people going in and destroying property and stealing. And most, you know, poor people, hopefully middle-class people, aren't thugs. They want to live in a peaceful society. Most people actually do go to work, and they want to be part of society. So let's not conflate the question of whether there should be social grants, et cetera. There's no doubt that we've got to do something about deep poverty, but that is a different issue. And what I appreciated about the president's speech was that he didn't conflate them. He said this is a security issue that needs to be dealt with, and it's pure thuggery. That's the first thing that I really wanted to get across. And it shouldn't be conflated with the idea that this is about people being poor. Mm-hmm. The second thing that's related to that, then, is leadership around ethics. Because to think that poor people are the ones who do this in a context of state capture, you know, all the stuff that we've seen around corporate South Africa and stealing from the state, it's actually rich people who steal as well, you know. So let's not connect it with what people's socioeconomic status is. But we have an ethics problem also about what's in an okay behavior and what is not. And we need a lot more leadership in this country going forward around ethics more generally.
If it is a security issue within the broader narrative, then there is some searching questions that need to be asked about the ANC internally staging some kind of counter-revolution and potentially even a coup d'etat. France, I want to bring you in on this point because you've often spoken about the powder keg that is underlying South African society, record high levels of youth unemployment, low growth, joblessness, And often it just takes a spark to set that powder keg off. And Jacob Zuma appears to have been that spark now. But many are now saying that this is the inevitable painful lancing to get rid of those who've been aligned to a patronage network, sucking the state dry for the last 10 years. And so this was inevitable. Do you see this more as a security issue now, or to Miriam's point, or do you see this as a popular uprising because of the issues in the powder keg?
I don't know if you can unscramble that egg. I mean, the powder keg creates a security problem, and the capacity to enforce order contributes then to the general malaise, which in turn contributes to the uncertainty, which again harms the investment climate. So these things feed off themselves. But over the past 25 years or so, we think in our team that we've seen an apparent relationship between growth, living standards, confidence in the future of the country, and support for the ANC, and levels of protest action. Now, the data is never perfect enough to, you know, nail those things down. But we're not surprised, and we've been warning clients for the past 2 years to expect exactly this, as that cocktail of low growth, stagnant real per capita GDP for a decade, very high levels of economic exclusion come together in the consequences of the lockdown decisions taken here over the last 18 months.
William, to bring you in, I mean, how do you read the current situation for our fledgling democracy from your vantage point?
I mean, you know, one of the things we haven't dealt with for the last couple of decades is a culture of violence. In a country like South Africa, where there was a liberation war against the autocratic regime, you have a culture of violence. The apartheid regime was violent, but the response to the apartheid regime was violent. Now, immediately after the end of apartheid, the ANC didn't tackle their culture of violence. I mean, we've seen trade union protests turning violent, university students violent. And often when it came to ANC members, the ANC itself was soft on that end. And secondly, you know, we've got a culture of impunity. So we see the looting going on, but there's been a looting under the Jacob Zuma presidency, I mean, of staggering proportions. Most probably our calculations, something like 3-4 trillion rand gone, you know, at a scale. That sort of looting, which one could almost, so if you're down at a grassroots level, you see that sort of kind of looting. It almost gives people a free pass for this kind of looting. So combine then with violence, culture of violence, this kind of culture of impunity. And also the ANC itself has postponed this reckoning. You cannot have an effective governing party with, with looters, populists, everyone inside a package. You have to cut off. And the ANC has pushed that, and this is unfortunate. This is actually the reckoning which also will change, of course, South Africa, but it will also change the ANC. So there's no way that, the Zuma group, including Ace Magashule, will ever return to the ANC. So, there's a new party on the offing. There's a no return moment. Mm. It's sad that it has come to such a violent end and not a peaceful end.
I want to stay with you for a second longer, William. Do you see this as a security issue, or do you see this more as a popular uprising issue, perhaps catalyzed or sparked by those very close to the former president?
I don't think this is a popular uprising. Of course, it started off that a Zuma group wanted to stage manage a popular uprising for two reasons. One, to try to press for pressure on Ramaphosa to get a presidential pardon for Jacob Zuma, or secondly, to try to to create a space of ungovernability and chaos so that people can push Ramaphosa out of the presidency. It started off like that, but then, of course, it went out of control and became now, a general a state of looting. I mean, the interesting thing is that Jacob Zuma has been absolutely quiet now. So if you were an ethical leader, he would have issued a statement for calm, for people to stop the looting, but he hasn't.
Well, I don't think anyone who's attended any of the Nkandla Tea Parties has spoken out against the looting and violence. In fact, if anything, it's been the exact opposite. We saw statements from the Jacob Zuma Foundation yesterday, which are borderline on treason, saying that the looting and the anarchy will continue until the former president is released. Martin, I want to bring you into the conversation here from organized businesses' perspective. And it's been disheartening for several reasons to witness over the last few days, but in particular, because many of the asset managers I chat to and business leaders were really reconsidering investing into the South African economy again on the back of various reforms, the increase in self-gen to 100 megawatts, the SAA partial privatization, and a few others. And so the narrative was starting to change. This now means our reputation, that narrative has taken a severe knock. Whether it's a knockout, I suppose time will tell. How are you reading it as organized business?
We are deeply concerned as business. Obviously, this has fundamentally undermined investor confidence domestically and internationally. We can't see the rule of law being effectively and transparently but impactfully imposed when we've got these types of societal challenges, which we knew about, but where they're not able to be controlled in an effective manner, then it's going to create havoc, I have to say, with the implementation of the reconstruction and recovery plan. We've seen that in, as I would imagine, people have noticed the volatility in the currency markets, interest rates blowing up, let alone the fact that the exchange itself is taking strain in terms of, as you say, key sectors of the economy. More importantly, or as importantly, I have to say, we need to ensure that we can give assurances to people that not only their lives and livelihoods, but that their property is protected. That hasn't been the case here. We can write off the prospect of any meaningful investment in the short to medium term until we can demonstrate with absolute confidence that we have a secure environment. And the second point that I would like to make, if I may, Michael, is that it is fundamentally challenged and undermined the vaccination rollout program. The vaccination rollout program is equally important. I mean, this has happened. It couldn't have happened at a worse time. During the third wave, in the middle of winter, when we're trying to accelerate the vaccination rollout program, in fact, KZN was the most successful of the provinces. We've had to suspend it in KZN for now. There are pharmacies and hospitals and indeed central warehouses that are under threat. Some of them have been burnt to the ground and indeed looted, not hospitals, I'm glad to say. Now, we all know that the world is watching with extreme care as to not only our ability to implement economic reform, but our ability to address the pandemic through the vaccination rollout program. So we've got both of these dynamics at play at the same time. And in both cases, we need to rely upon the state to be able to give us the reassurance that it has got its arms around both of these programs, the Economic Reconstruction and Recovery Plan and the vaccination rollout program.
And on that point, and we'll come back to it, Martin, the issue here for small businesses, many large businesses will have at least had SASRIA cover as part of their broader insurance, which will help mitigate the economic impact. I don't see many of the smaller businesses and shops that were looted having similar cover. So it will be incumbent upon business to help support as we rebuild. But Jackie, I want to bring you back in on the issue around security and the failure here of intelligence and SAPS to get ahead of this crisis. We saw Minister Dlodlo saying yesterday that there were 9 various reports in the build-up to this, yet the state seems to have failed to act. Why?
Well, we've been concerned for a number of years, in actual fact, about the extent to which the president and the presidency and the ANC broadly have not recognized the extent to which one of the major successes of the Zuma presidency was effectively the destruction of South Africa's intelligence, efforts to undermine the judicial system, and then, of course, the policing are in an ongoing crisis. We at the Institute run a monitoring program where since 2013 we've been tracking violence and instability across South Africa. And our data tells us that in 75% of the instances where looting and violence has happened, These are traditional hotspots of areas that have a history of sporadic protest, of intergroup and public violence, and so on. So what has happened and where it has happened was to a large extent predictable, but because we don't have a functioning intelligence system, and some apparently of the intelligence operatives appear to be, may have even been involved in this, and because our broad security response system is not working appropriately, we are faced with a crisis. And at the moment, in the midst of the crisis, this calls for very effective and clear and ongoing provision of information and communication at every level of our society before we can get a grip on the situation. France and others have made the point quite correctly that the egg that has been scrambled can't be unscrambled. It is a combination of a variety of areas that have led us to this situation. And it's going to take a concerted effort to work ourselves out of this. Eventually, a crisis within the ANC is becoming, in a sense, a national crisis. And without a clear economic economic recovery strategy that unlocks growth and eventually employment and all of these other things, we are going to remain trapped in what is a very, very difficult situation that I think Martin outlined very clearly in terms of the lack of confidence that this has in South Africa. But what needs to happen is that the president needs to engage and grapple with the damage and reforming the security agencies that eventually, when the pawpaw hits the fan, is responsible for trying to deal with the situation. And that has not been evident thus far.
And France, to bring you back in, what is evident in chatting to Piet le Roux of Sakhalecha yesterday is that community groups and civil society have held firm as that thin blue line has frayed in the face of this weak and failing state. How do you see it?
Well, citizens have formed militia in parts of the Eastern Cape, I'm quite informed on. Taxi industry is enforcing the law in key centers. And what this is actually very dangerous, because our escape from the state of nature was to form the state, the central definition of which was a monopoly on the use of force. And that has been surrendered here. And I think that's perhaps the starkest insight that I can draw. And the question becomes quite a fundamental one. Can the South African state be reassembled? Or are we now on a trajectory? And I lean towards this. It's a small, lonely corner of the analyst world where what we are seeing is the collapse under the weight of its contradictions of the administration that came to power in South Africa in the 1980s. And I cling to the view that by the end of this decade, we will see that administration out of power. And at the inflection point, the great South African question, when does reform happen? I don't think it's going to be a decision taken within the current administration. I think it's going to be a change of power that happens through the ballot box. And that is where we are headed now. And events of the past 72 hours or so have made me even firmer of that view.
That is a very sanguine, sober and frightening view as well. Dr. Altman, on the issue of reform, only faster labor-absorptive growth will defuse the situation, will drain the powder keg of its ammunition. Do you see the current environment aiding and abetting faster reform in an environment where we're going to have key investment decisions, foreign investors certainly not making any investments over the short to medium term, as Martin Rothschild has just said. Martin Kingston, sorry.
Well, the first thing is that reforms are happening, and there's a big drive with Operation Vulindlela, and there have been some big announcements lately around particularly electricity and transport in reforming those markets. And we now have state-owned entities, namely Transnet and Eskom, that actually want to do it. You know, there was a lot of institutional resistance, and there's a hell of a lot more that has to happen, and the state recognizes that. But to the point of the idea of, within a decade, this regime's going to be over, is, you know, I've got to put on the table. Let's put this into context. 40 to 50 years, actually, of slow growth, not just 10. With a few good years in the 2000s and a few good years maybe in the 60s. But broadly speaking, we've had over 20% African unemployment since the late 1970s. So, you know, we didn't just wake up to high poverty and high inequality. This is more about stagnation and stasis and being too locked into the situation we're in. The idea that there is now violence, I mean, in Cape Town, just forget about Zuma and some calling it in Zuma, there's hectic taxi violence going on. And those are just taxi wars going on that have disrupted the entire taxi industry in Cape Town. Now, I don't know, maybe, you know, that's the kind of thing that we see in this country. Thousands of municipal service delivery protests that become violent each year. And understandably, but bad service delivery does not necessarily lead to violence. That's not protest. That is just thuggery. So we see that around the country. Now, solving an unemployment problem is always a long-term issue. When you have high unemployment, it's never something that gets resolved quickly. And when you have as deep poverty as we have, it is possible to resolve, as we've seen in a number of countries. We've spoken about that in other shows that we've had. But it doesn't happen quickly. And to think that when you have, you know, about half the population living in poverty, over 30% unemployment, you know, solving unemployment does not stop this violence. The people who, as Jackie was saying, the people who are engaged in this violence, you know, he'd be more of an expert than I would on precisely who this is. I don't know who it is, but I am not surprised at all at what he is saying of the overlap between where this violence is and where the violence is in other instances, because this is about criminal activity. So let's separate out the issue of people's frustration, which is their right to be frustrated, and let's get these policies improved and reforms on track. But please don't conflate that with criminal behavior. Poor people are not criminals. There are criminals who are poor people, but please don't paint that, you know, brushstroke where we say poor people are frustrated and therefore they're running into macro and destroying the store and stealing it clean. Those are different problems.
Disturbing images that we saw this week of people running off with whatever they could, asking for their 350 Rand social relief of distress grant. And it is disturbing because many amongst the elite and in the middle class need to understand that it's 350 Rand that is keeping the wolf from the door for many individuals. And to your earlier point, Miriam, deep searching conversations now around a basic income grant surely must be held, as South Africa's society hasn't served to function for the majority for such a long time. Jackie, I just want to bring it back to you in terms of your analysis as to where the violence really started and who's fomenting this. There's a story around one of Zuma's loyalists, Thulani Dlomo, being one of the key instigators here. What is the intelligence that the Institute has on who's been fanning these flames?
We don't know anything more except that that is what is available in the public media, and one has to be careful at the moment. False rumors, false narratives are awash, and it'll take some time before we get a decent sense of what was behind this and how much organization went into it. It is clear that originally there was some organization and some facilitation. But the extent of the subsequent violence reflects the deep-seated stress, anxiety that South Africans have, that have built up because of the factors that we've all mentioned. And I don't think anybody is making the argument that these are poor people that are responsible for the violence. Our analysis is that the 75% of the violence is happening in crowded, unserviced areas with poor community-police relations, high levels of unemployment, food security, and other economic challenges. And it reinforces a pattern of violence that has been evident in South Africa. And you have a pattern of violence at the same time you have the capture and dismantling and incompetence, inefficiency, whichever term you want to use, of the security agency, starting with intelligence. So we are blind. We are entirely blind, both in intelligence as well as in crime information and analysis. And many things have to be fixed in South Africa, but we have to get a grip on the entire security apparatus, placing it in the hands not of various factions and so on, but of government, and fixing it, because we are going to have to deal with ongoing violence and instability in this country for a long, long time. It's manageable. And what's happening at the moment is also manageable. It certainly is causing us a lot of negative publicity and all these kind of things. But we can get out of this. That will require the long-term effects that we are all speaking about, because, as Miriam says, it's going to take a decade or two to grow yourself out of this out of this problem.
Yaki Salia is the founding director of the Institute for Security Studies, who is joined around the table by Frans Cronier, director at the Center for Risk Analysis, Dr. Miriam Altman, director of Altman Advisory Services and National Planning Commissioner, William Gumede, professor at the University of Wits School of Governance and chairperson of Democracy Works Foundation, and Martin Kingston, chair of the Steering Committee for Business for South Africa, analyzing the powder keg that is currently detonating in KZN and other parts of the country.